Thank you, Chair, and to the speakers for three fantastically wide-ranging and thought-provoking presentations. And I suppose by way of a disclaimer for what might come later, that I certainly welcome the Maritime 2050 strategy, and reiterating Roger's point that it is necessary to have a plan, and I certainly applaud that recognition at the Department of Transport to have a long-time forecast for the maritime sector. So I'd like to just draw on a few of the points raised by the speakers under three broad categories of science, technology and innovation, collaboration and people, who ultimately are our greatest asset and will deliver the aspirations of the Maritime 2050 strategy. So we heard from Roger that there is disruptive technology to really change how our sector operates, and that technology is perhaps the biggest disruptor that we are facing. While Sarah showed us back into the past that we have this long history of leading the way from our lead-lined warships. So it strikes me from what we have heard this evening that we can view science, technology and innovation through a number of different lenses. So one viewpoint is to look at new science, technology and innovation and see how we can apply that to a number of different sectors. An alternative viewpoint, and arguably a more far-sighted viewpoint, is perhaps to look at the future through the lens of a sector, in this case maritime, and shine a light on the science, technology and innovation opportunities within that sector. And Roger touched on this by talking about the engagement in the preparation of the Maritime 2050 strategy by engaging with those who were within and on the periphery of the sector. So I'd also like to just draw on some of the comments under the broad heading of collaboration. And again, I recognise Sarah's reference here to Darwin, talking about those who thrive are those who can adapt. And also at the launch of the IMO, the launch of the Maritime 2050 strategy at the IMO, Sarah also made a good speech and paraphrased Darwin, noting that it's those species that collaborate rather than compete that thrive. And the need for government to recognise and reward that collaboration so that national interest can take precedence over self-interest. And that has been touched on in a number of the talks this evening about how we need to have new mindsets in our business leaders to be more adaptable and versatile, to have those flexible business models to enable new ways of operating. I thought it was interesting when Roger was starting off his talk talking about how civil servants often get a bad rap for not being experts in the sector, but actually what they bring is a new perspective to things. And I think that's really at the heart of collaboration and broadening out across the sector for anything, is that as we collaborate more, we get to draw on those new inputs, those fresh perspectives that maybe otherwise we might miss. And I would also like to draw on Sarah's point about the MARI UK consortium. They're greater than the sum of the parts, philosophy, and that they are the first truly cross-sector vehicle to build a culture of collaboration. And certainly over the last few years, that consortium, whether it had the name yet or not, has been central to a number of initiatives. And there's a need for that energy and commitment at some point to convert into a plan and an action plan that can be operationalised by that coalition of the willing. In terms of collaboration, there has also been a lot of talk about collaboration between government and industry. And I think I need to note that, from my position, that the role of academia really needs to be visible and recognised as part of that collaborative nexus between industry and the government. Academia has a critical role in providing the next generation of maritime leaders and in the research that underpins the next generation of science and technology and innovation. And I raise this point because I was surprised when reading the Maritime 2050 Strategy and the Science and Technology Autonomy Route Map, how often collaboration between government and industry was made without reference to the role of academia in that nexus. So, moving swiftly on to people. And in some ways, I think people probably had the least coverage in tonight's talk. There was certainly some discussion about how we need to have this human systems partnership going forward, the role of science and technology in taking the workforce out of risky and dirty environments. But there's clearly a much broader people aspect to maritime sector going forward to 2050, and it's clear that the aspirations of the Maritime 2050 strategy can only be realised through investment in people, and that science and technology and innovation is going to be driven by people. So we need to invest not only in the people who are already in the maritime sector, both those with much experience and those young people, but also attract those who have not yet selected a professional path to choose maritime. So just reiterating that point, that the training and education and research at all levels and across the whole sector is really central to achieving the aspirations set out in the strategy. So just in summary, to address the topic of the evening, delivering the government's Maritime 2050 strategy, the vision for science and innovation. It seems that we can crystallise that vision that the UK be a global exemplar of a high-tech maritime nation. And I really applaud Roger's emphasis that this needs to be achieved with sustainability, prosperity and security all hand in hand. And that this can be achieved through effective collaboration between government, industry and academia to ensure that greater than the sum of the parts outcome. The strategy and the route map set out a range of ideas and aspirations, and as was highlighted by Sarah and Roger, a huge range. And it's important that the activities that go forward are prioritised and coordinated sufficiently to ensure it has impact. I think it's also important not just to recognise the routes, but also perhaps some of the blocks or the blind spots that might derail us. And these seem to include the lack of visibility of the maritime sector across its breadth, as it was articulated by Sarah, and as pointed out by Roger when he took his position, his surprise that there wasn't a long-term forecast for a sector of such significance to the nation. So then there's a lack of visibility of the maritime sector across all parts of government, although I applaud the Department of Transport's recognition. I think there's also a lack of visibility of the role of academia in achieving the aspirations set out in the strategy and the technology route map. And part of developing us into our high-tech maritime nation is recognising the sector and recognising all the players in that sector such that support can be appropriately provided. And so to close on the enablers, I think the Maritime 2050 strategy is, in the words of the Secretary of State for Transport, Chris Grayling, bold and aspirational, and of Minister Ghani, ambitious. And in the UK, we have great minds, great opportunities to train the new generation of maritime leaders to develop those new technologies to navigate the UK through this fourth industrial revolution that we've heard about this evening. We have a great maritime history, established industry, demonstrated examples that shine light on cross-sector collaboration. But our competitor nations do too. And so those bold and aspirational ambitions of the strategy must be supported by real investment. And this is in the hands of the various government departments, not just the Department of Transport, the government-funded research councils, and some of the learned societies along this terrace.